When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Decade Project, a very special One Heat Minute Productions Patreon exclusive podcast where we go back and deep dive on a movie's a decade ago, because really it takes a decade for something to really get its hooks in you. And as much as you might love something at the time, it's like, does it stick around and is it rewatchable? And so today I'm joining my Too Much movie co-star, the legendary Rob Belushi, to talk about a movie that I think is... it's so hard to say that it's not my favorite of 2013, a decade ago. It is, of course, Martin Scorsese's absolutely batshit, vibrant, sensational, hilarious, epic about American Greed, The Wolf of Wall Street.
My name is Jordan Belfort. The year I turned 26, I made $49 million, which really pissed me off because it was three shy of a million a week.
We're making a name for ourselves.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles. You know what a Fugazi is?
No, Fugazi. It's a fake.
Hey, Fugazi, Fugazi. It's a Wazi, it's a Woozy, it's a fairy dust.
Was all this legal? Absolutely not. We were making more money than we knew what to do with.
We don't work for you, man.
Yeah, my money taped your boobs. Technically, you do work for me.
What's wrong, Daddy? But watching you
bring home. Oh, my God. FBI, any kind of booze you might want.
No, the Bureau forbids us from drinking.
Duh. So follow me, you're good. About to go. I'm doing 500, I'm out of control. But there's nowhere to go. And there's no way to slow. If I knew what I knew in the past, I would have been like that on your. How does this actually work?
There's a big money sign.
They get launched at the time, they stick.
Yeah. This is their gift, okay? They're built to be thrown like a lawn dart.
One, two, three!
Stop. Okay?
Safety first.
Safety
obviously.
Is safety no, is not, first. Okay. We don't want to get a bad reputation. I'm in the morning, and I'm zoning, I think I'm possessed. It's an omen, I keep it 300, like the Romans, 300. We're the Trojans, baby, we live.
Let's start it.
Smoke crack with me, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. One of the funnest, one of the funniest and funnest movies I think I've ever seen in my life. And this is a movie that in the Decade Project, I usually ask, like, what was the reaction at the time? And then we start talking about, like, and now, like, how is it sort of grown or evolved over 10 years? And I genuinely think from the moment that it came out to right now, other than some sort of outlier opinions, it was that this thing is unbelievable. It is amazingly funny. The filmmaking is peerless. And I just don't think it has ever diminished in any capacity for me. It's only grown.
I agree. I mean, I rewatched it again. I rewatched it last year. It's a strange movie because I always I know that I love it, and I always forget what an absolute bonkers shitball amazing ride it is, and it doesn't get any less fun. You know, no. I'll tell you a quick story. Like, first reaction. This movie came out on Christmas, and my mom's side in Chicago, like, I force everyone to go see a movie every Christmas. And I made us go, of course, see Wolf of Wall Street. And we took my grandmother, who passed in 2021, but she was my ace. Yeah, she was my ace. And it was me and my cousin and my mother and my stepfather all at the movie theater in Chicago. And, like, you know, the opening kind of, whatever the intro, or it's like the Stratton Oakmont thing fades right into the cocaine in the butthole. I just like lean forward and look to my right at my grandmother, who was 82 at the time, and she just looked back at me and like nodded because she loved Scorsese. And I was like, "Are you okay, Grandma?" And she's like, "She watched the whole thing, man." God bless her. It was a weird opening moment, though. She was
that,
good.
That is an experience for she the ages. She was blue chips. Where you look you look at your 82-year-old grandmother and you think, this movie can so quickly take you from the opening credits to you're out of here. And she's like, if you can survive Leo doing coke out of a hooker's asshole, you're like, I'm ready. I'm ready.
And as, like, you know, as an identified cocaine addict, like, I watch this movie and I'm like, oh my God, I left so much on the table. I mean, a real piece of shit. Like, I was talking to my buddy who is also a cocaine addict about Wolf of Wall Street. He really reminds me of Jordan Belfort. So I'm like texting him, like, dude, you are Belfort. Sell me this pen. And he's like, that's us. I'm like, dude, I got as close to that as I could with $350 in my bank account at all times. Wow. You know what I mean? Like, but to your point, like, it holds up. I mean, gangbusters.
It's so funny.
It's ridiculous to me. I looked back and I saw, I forgot that Leo won for Revenant.
Revenant. Yeah. A year later.
It's ridiculous he didn't win for this.
No, it's out of control. It's absolutely out of control.
He's so incredible. Like, he takes a character that is, it's, you know, Patrick Bateman essentially, and entombs him with even more humanity while being even, you know, close to psychotic killer as Patrick Bateman is. I mean, the guy is off his ass good at his best. I mean, maybe his best ever, but everything he does is great.
And even the deeply now, currently, as we record this, problematic and weird Jonah Hill. Like, Jonah Hill's performance in this movie is lights out. It is unbelievable. And you just can't even fathom that, like, this guy who absolutely fantastic and things like Superbad and all those things and all the Judd Apatow, like, you know, comedies and all that sort of stuff. He comes in here and the murderers that he's just so, everyone in this movie and all the handoffs and just everyone is exquisite. It's unbelievable.
I mean, the two he's incredible. And like the two moments that that really signified to me that character was when he believes he has more power than the other person, and the how obnoxious and aggravating he is with Jordan's dad about the bill, and then with Brad in the striptease, like how he never stops just, you know, exercising this nerd's, you know, kingdom over him, and he's so aggravating. Like, he's brilliant, and you know, he is part of the engine of that whole movie.
What kind of hooker takes credit cards? A rich one.
Yeah, a rich one, exactly. But there's so many, like, obviously Matthew McConaughey comes in and just, you know, drops a gold brick at the beginning of the movie, and Bernthal is amazing, and Margot Robbie, incredible star making performance. I mean, just
She was just
everything
like,
she says is gold.
Yeah, she walks into the movie, and you just firstly are taken with like, oh, this might be the most beautiful human being that's walking the face of the earth right now. But then I always measure, I know you do a bit, and we've talked about this sort of stuff before when we've chatted, is like the measure of great actor for me, especially an emerging great actor, is not when they do a movie by themselves or it's a small movie and you're like, oh, they're good. They're very good. Movie's very accomplished. It's more when you see them go with powerhouses, and how do they hold up? Are they, does the star in the movie like cast a shadow? And every moment that she's on screen, like Leo like wilts, and obviously it's part of the character, so it works, but he just like wilts in her presence. And you're like, oh, she's fantastic. Like she's going toe to toe. She went to see an Australian soap opera called Neighbours, one of the worst shows in the history of the world. It's our answer to, you know, Bold and the Beautiful. It's so bad. And she just walks into a Scorsese movie and just crushes. And you're like, oh shit, she's going to be the biggest star in the world. And like now in 2023, it's like, oh yeah, she's Barbie. She's going to make $1 billion. That movie's going to make $1 billion. She's going to walk away with hundreds of millions. She's going to be like, people are going to call her on her phone and she's going to go no and just hang the phone up. Like she's just like, there's going to be three people she works with for the rest of her career. Greta Gerwig, probably, you know, Chris Nolan still probably will knock on her door at some point, but like Spielberg, she'll be like, nah, I don't need to do anything with anyone. I'm good. Thanks very much. I'm the biggest star in the world.
Yeah. Well, the effect that she had, I mean, Scorsese is masterful in this. And the effect that I know other people have probably talked about it at the time, you know, but it's very Goodfellas, which is, you know, it's so great. And her effect on that party when she enters is very similar to that effect that Lorraine Bracco has on Henry Hill when she's yelling at him. Yeah. It, everything stops. And, you know, of course, Donnie's jacking off and he's like fully in falling in love with her in front of Kristen Milioti, who's also amazing. When she pulls him out of that limousine, it's heartbreaking. And then when she leaves, that last conjugal moment between them is so sad.
Yeah.
And like, his abuse of her and how she continues to follow him around with the kids. And it's like the breathtaking despair of the hole he's dug himself, you know, ripping up that couch for more blow. I mean, I know it well, it sucks. I would have died. I would have died in 72 hours. I mean, these guys are incredible. The thought I kept having was like, when I was doing all the coke I could find in Chicago, I could not show up to wait tables in the morning. How the fuck do these guys go into the office? Like, I couldn't be seen in public. I'd look out my window and see people jogging, and it was it was like Nightmare Alley to me. You know what I mean? Like, that has nothing to do with anything though, but the three hours goes by so fast. Scorsese is so fun in what he allows the characters to do, where he takes them, the amount of access he gives it. And like, I had one other thought too. I the guy who plays, it's Brian Sacca. I forget. It's not Rugrat. I forget his name, but it's like, it's not the Sea Otter. One of his boys.
Oh, Robbie Feinberg, so Pinhead. Funny. Pinhead. The Brian Sacker plays Robbie Feinberg, Pinhead.
Yeah. So Pinhead. So I got a chance to hang out with him one time. We were playing a game of poker. He's a friend of a friend. And I was just like, to tell me all about this. And he was just like, that plane scene, that plane orgy. This is the one thing that I remember. He was just like, the lights, the bodies, it just stunk. It stunk so bad. I was like, dude. I bet. Great guy, nice guy, a hell of an actor, did a great job. But yeah, it's it's kind of like Scorsese's just like twisting taffy the whole time, you know, yeah. Like something changing the color, but it's a escalating flavor, and it's just so fun. And the only other thing that I was thinking of, like in terms of, you were talking about how is it viewed today, I think besides the drugs and sex, which is not as like celebrated as it was in the 80s, you know, it's still an incredible marker on the excess of wealth and what we're dealing with right now in the strike and CEOs and the billionaire class in general. Like, it's just who the victims are, who are the perpetrators, the way the system benefits the few, and it's all a game that we play to our detriment. And the other thing I was thinking about is, like, this story is very specifically a story of a privileged and entitled, you know, Caucasian class of stockbrokers, and that the punishment would probably be gravely different for this type of offense if it was not a middle-class white dude, you know, son of accountants. And in the end, you know, Scorsese makes that point. He's like, I forgot what it was like to go to jail and be rich. Like, in this country, money buys everything. So those are just kind of the takes I was thinking of in thinking of then and now. And I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily a different take than what Scorsese was shooting into the atmosphere or blowing into the asshole with a Coke straw. But
the one thing that I guess the take on the movie at the time that was a detractor, other than the form and the performances and all that sort of stuff, was like, Scorsese's buying into this excess and it's glamorizing it to a certain extent. And it's like, have you not seen a Martin Scorsese movie? They don't all end fun. Like, he deals in rises and falls. And it's like, and the thing that maybe stung people is like, the fall for this guy wasn't driving around, you know, wide-eyed on coke, like thinking that he's going to die and that the federal, you know, the feds are going to come after him and investigators are going to get him. It's like he just drove it all the way until the engine exploded. And then essentially, like a cat being thrown out of a 10-story building, miraculously lands on his feet and gets to live his life and write this book and go and do personal talks and, you know, get some notoriety at the end of it, because it was just like, that's the culture. The culture still celebrates this unfathomable rich thing, like everyone has the opportunity to get it. Like anyone, like we're all on an equal egalitarian playing field that you can do things and this can happen, rather than the truth of the matter is, which is like, these white collar criminals, like, and especially even the guys that are higher up who can afford these high powered lawyers and sort of stuff, they just deal themselves and bargain themselves out of the real jail time that they deserve for all the crazy shit that they do. And that's just like, it's very Marty going like, it is what it is, mate. It is what it is. And so this movie for me, I'm like, now the more that you watch it, yes, the crescendo and the chaos and the debauchery is so funny and it's hilarious. And the way that he continues to just not slow down, even when everything is closing in and around him, but it doesn't ever end any less poignantly for me. It's like, it ends so strong every time. And I'm like, yep, there's no justice in the world for people like this. It would be too trite if he like got locked up, you know, like him marched away in handcuffs, because it's not true. And Scorsese's not going to deal with that. He's not going to do that. And nor is Terrence Winter, a brilliant writer. They're not gonna make it so rote and bullshit. They're gonna do this. That's how they're gonna do it.
I agree 100%. I'm like, Scorsese's fables always work for me, and yeah. You know, the way it ends is like, the guy's a sociopath.
Yes.
And even if you take away everything he loves, which are his kids and his wife, and most of all his money, he's still thinking about himself, but it still ends like, you know, he's ordering egg noodles and ketchup, like Henry Hill, you know, and it doesn't end like Nikki and Anthony out in the cornfield and casino. It ends like, you know, Ace in San Diego, still knowing how to pick winners and still making money. And I think it's something Scorsese shows us over and over again, is that this country is rotten. And what attracts us to that rot is the appearance of never-ending opportunity, which these people touch on. It's that Catholic sin thing. It always completely corrupts them and ends up being their downfall, which is a delight to watch when it isn't your own life. And you know, to your point, which I think is a fucking awesome one, Blake, which is like the myth of the I think people who misunderstand this movie, it's the same as like Elon Musk's like advocates and crypto bros on Twitter, or people who like bow down to billionaires. They're just like, it's a myth that they can believe in that makes them feel like one day their fantasy will come true.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not available to a lot of people.
And it's like, also it's the same behavior of like, you know, we see it in pop culture commentary a lot, where people like defend multi-billion-dollar companies about the trash art that they put out, their advertisements that are there to sell toys and games and bullshit, and people like defend them to the hilt, and you're like, they don't need you, they don't need your help, you paid the money, they don't need you to be on a soapbox, they don't give a shit if you're there or if you're not there, they don't care if you like it or if you don't like it, if you bought it, you lost, it's over.
It doesn't make you one of them.
No.
To be bootlicking.
You're not on their team.
Capitalist bosses. Yeah, exactly. They feel about you the way Jordan feels about the people he's on the phone with his telephone terrorists. You stay on the phone until he buys or dies.
Dies.
And it's like that's
it.
Their life is worth nothing. Their life is a sale. And I don't know. I had another thought, but I just lost it listening to you. You're better at this than I am. But
let's dive into some scenes, because when you said that, I was like, this movie is so full. Like, you just scroll down the IMDb. It's fucking unbelievable. And I just want to say, like, really, also, Spike Jones as his boss in the penny is,
it's got the greatest line delivery in the whole movie. And I forget, it's like, I would be happy to if you sell $5,000 worth of these, I will give you head right now, and I would be delighted. I pointed that out to my wife. I'm like, that's Spike Jones, man, he should be in everything. Like, he's so good in Three Kings. Oh, this was the, I'm sorry, it came to me. Before we go, can I make one a quick?
Yeah, please.
I think another thing that could be a detraction for this movie is something that we're seeing a lot with Oppenheimer. And I don't take a position. I try to see, which is, we don't see much of the victims.
Yes.
And, you know, another movie that came out before this, Boiler Room, had some very great moments with the victims of the crimes. You know, the guy who's divorced and thrown out of his house. And some of the most impactful parts of the Boiler Room are the victims. But I think it's Oppenheimer. It's The Wolf of Wall Street. It's a movie about the person. And we follow the trajectory of the person in a uniquely American story, you know, and what that means about the country and its flaws. And, you know, we know through multiple, like, Kristen Milioti in this beautiful moment of like, don't you feel bad about, shouldn't you be selling this to rich people? And he's like, yeah, but rich people don't buy this shit. you know, there is homage paid to, and she is wiped from the fucking board.
Yeah,
see that character. And
because she doesn't fit, she doesn't fit into his orchestration. The whole thing is Jordan orchestrating this kingly life that he's wanted to live for his entire time, like his entire, you know, his entire existence. And he just, anything that doesn't fit with the image of what he's like, that self-propagating image. And then he has all these sycophants who just hang around him, these little parasitic mates who love being in his orbit because they just get all the cast-offs and cut-offs and all the benefits. It's a cult. It's exactly what it is.
It's a cult. It's a capitalistic cult of greed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And she says it to him at this point in the film that is perfect, which is, I don't even recognize you. You are a different fucking person.
Yes.
And because the earlier scene with her, when he's looking at the newspaper and she's like, you're a stockbroker. You're not a stock boy. You know, yeah. It kind of reminded me of that Lauren Holly, you know,
yeah,
Captain Jack from Any Given Sunday. But she's supportive, she's alive, she has heart, and there is no room for a real person with humanity in this system and where he wants to go. So anyway, I don't know if that was just dumb or not, but
no,
let's go down the credits list.
It was great. In this movie, there are so many amazing people. I want to go, we talked about John Bernthal, we mentioned Rob Reiner. Again, directors coming in and just having a fucking ball with Scorsese, who they love, like actor, directors, my favorite thing, right? Rob Reiner is having the best time. Oh, jolly, jolly good, jolly good. Who the fuck?
He's so good at introducing characters memorably, too. Like the fucking Equalizer, getting a call after 9 p.m., flipping out is like, it's such a good character intro, you know?
It's the best. But you know who is literally just sex on legs in this movie, besides some of the more obvious characters that you would think? Joanna Lumley's Aunt Emma.
Holy
shit. Is she delicious? And the internal monologue is like, is he flirting with me? Is she flirting with me? It's just so amazing. I can't get enough of her. Every time I watch it, I'm like, I just like the movie stops and then I'm like, oh, horny Aunt Emma. Bless her heart.
I mean, that's the one like thing in this rewatch where it cuts to her and she's like, is he hitting on me? I'm like, did you not just like, am I a piece of shit? Because it really seemed like she was hitting on me. You know what I mean? Like, I need to check myself and not go outside of the house, because that woman was fucking hitting on him so hard. You know what I mean? But I guess,
oh my
not.
God.
I guess I would have misread that too. And then Shea Whigham with the little bit of chop line was amazing. Oh, well, yeah. Batten down the head. God, I love him so much.
So good.
I love him.
You just keep going down, like PJ Byrne playing Rugrat, Kenneth Choi, Chester Ming. Unbelievable.
God damn it. Him eat that scene where he's eating the donuts during the FBI interrogation. the schmuck bait he gives when he's like, oh, that one, no, I don't remember. And Rugrat, like the thing, he's amazing. But when they're doing the, and yeah. he's sticking his chin out, you know, during the, it's the everyone is so free in their performance. I mean, I'm just.
Ethan Suplee, great actor.
Great
actor. So good.
He's great.
I think what, if we're talking about how it plays now, it's kind of impossible to imagine just the life that movies live in meme form, because like it used to be like movie quotes, but now in the age of the internet, this movie is memed to death in like the best possible way. And like Leo like gets it all the time. Like Leo becomes a meme in every new movie that he does. But I have seen, I reckon I have seen the I'm not fucking leaving meme for everything from like Australian rugby league to movies to like, this is that one friend that you have, like when he really needs to go get an Uber home and he won't, I'm not fucking leaving. Like, and you're just like, it's like, I have seen this movie memed in countless ways and I never get sick of it. Like, that's how you know that like a full decade later, it is still in the culture, because it is memed to death, because there are so many quotable, memeable moments. And like the meme of Leo, like the little gif of Leo, like crawling to the car and, you know, I'm not fucking leaving. And the
one I
the
use
money,
is
throwing the money.
Fun coupons.
Fun coupons.
One I use, because it's, every meme you send from this movie is like sending a piece of mail with a touch of insanity into any text or tweet you're sending. It's like a floodgate of insane, you know, and it's so good.
It's and so like I was looking up some of the quotes. Ready? It's like I was looking at some of the quotes. And I'm like, the quotes all just made me like go, I've seen these memed before. Like, and when you were talking about like on a daily basis, I consume enough drugs to sedate Manhattan, Long Island, and Queens for a month. I take Quaaludes 10 to 15 times a day for my back pain, Adderall to stay focused, Xanax to take the edge off, pot to mellow me out, cocaine to wake me back up again, and morphine because, well, it's awesome. It's like, what an insane thing. Max Belfort, Jordan, $430,000 in 1 month, Geordie, huh? Their business expenses. Look at this, $26,000 for one fucking dinner. Dad, we had clients, Pfizer clients, champagne, the porterhouse from Argentina. Like, Jesus Christ, this movie is so quotable as well. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, and the one that was, the one that really hit me hard was McConaughey today, McConaughey's speech, which like, is the whole thesis of the whole fucking movie, right? Yeah. It's the system and the ego and the cult. Like, he's the first cult leader that we see. And it's when he's like, they love you because you're making them rich on paper. And we're taking cold, hard cash. It's all a crime.
Yeah,
the whole system is a crime.
We're moving money from the client's pocket to your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, but if we do good, you know, for both of us, isn't that good? No, fuck them. Fuck them. The other thing that like I couldn't get enough yelling. Like the more yelling, the
more
better.
Yelling.
And normally like you don't want to be yelled at in a movie. Like I couldn't, this time I was like, I could not get enough of the screaming and yelling. I loved it. I fucking loved it. He's so phenomenal. Like I think when I was watching this time, I was like, this is my favorite part, is at his wedding when they're all dancing and he jumps in the middle and does the
best dance ever.
I'm like, how the fuck does he do that? Like, he's so good, man. He's the guy. He's the king of the assholes.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
He's the king. But that's another meme. It's just a memed moment of Leo dancing.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's just
this
dance. I'm like, I've sent that to so many people. I was like, someone was like, oh, I loved your moves on the dance floor at that wedding last night. And I'm like, yeah, here's some footage I got. and then just send it off. You're like, yeah, that was me. It's so good. It's like it's everything. Like it's such a like an intoxicating madness, and it's such a joyride to be on. And it's like, I think that some people miss that, like, that's the point. The point is Scorsese is trying to intoxicate you, because this is how people keep doing this. This is how the culture is rotten. It's because it's so fucking fun. Like you said, like with $350 in my pocket, being an identified cocaine addict, it's like, if you had, it's like the Donnie scene. You got paid, what does he say? He's like, you paid like $70,000.
$70,000 last month.
You got paid $70,000. He goes, you show me your paycheck for pay slip and I quit my job and I come work for you.
And he did.
It's like, if you had that, it's like, oh, if you've got any kind of impulse control issues, it's like, I don't know if my personality is the best for this thing.
Oh, I mean, look, I don't know if they can, I mean, I come, maybe it's my age and just my kind of born with the privilege that I have, but like, I look at that and I'm like, oh yeah, this is my drive to spin off into an oblivion of unaccountability, to live solely for myself with the resources to do whatever I want, is so strong and destructive. And you see that it's destructive in a lot of ways here, but I mean, that's the thing that I have to check in myself, is like the fucking glee of living vicariously through these fucking demons is what alights me. You know what I mean? And then at the end of the movie, you're sitting there like, man, we left a lot on the table for my buddy, you know, who's also sober now and like has a life worth living finally, you know? And I'm just like, God, it's the difference of living only for yourself and having a life that you can look back on at the end and being like, my life meant something. Yeah. And that is that, I mean, you know what that is. It's like having a positive impact on the people in your immediate universe of concern and the community at large.
Yes.
And this Jordan Belfort is the fucking opposite of that.
Yeah. He is a cancer. He's the most selfish human being maybe that has ever lived. And what Scorsese does is he humanizes him, because he goes, look at how intoxicating his life is. And if you didn't have a moral compass or just morality, if you were a sociopath, it wouldn't matter to you that you were stealing hundreds of millions of dollars from many people and completely rotting systems and messing things up. It wouldn't matter.
And that's the thing,
no one's going to self-reflect. You're not going to self-reflect at the end. Like, that's the thing. He doesn't cheapen it with like self-reflection. He's like, I'm still selling you this fucking pen.
He goes back to the beginning of the whole, you know,
the whole grist
arm. Yeah. But I'll go one step further, Blake. The system eradicates your, compass, your moral compass.
Yeah, it does.
He has it. In the conversation with McConaughey, he has it from his parents, who are two accountants who take accountability for things. He has it with his first wife. You know, he knows what's right and wrong. But upon the taste of unaccountability, he wipes all of that out and replaces it with Donnie Azoff, Rugrat, Sea Otter, you know, Choi, you know what I mean? Like, and that's addiction. I mean, he says in the beginning he was addicted to money, but like, it's all the same shit. It's filling the thing inside yourself with something outside of yourself.
And the one question that I ask on this project in particular when I'm doing it is like, what is, you know, we talk about how it was received. We talk about how it was received. We talk about those sorts of things and how it's evolved. But the big thing that I also like to talk about is like, what have we learned from this movie? And I think the thing is that we've learned is that, like, number one, Leo is the last big, like, really true big movie star. And he's curated his career by working with exclusively the biggest directors in the world and, like, pushing Martin Scorsese into his 80s to, like, please keep making movies because you're still the guy. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want to
work. Fucking, I went to see Mission Impossible and the trailer, which was great. The trailer for Killers of the Flower Moon came on and I fucking cried. And my buddy next to me was like, what is wrong with you? John Barinholtz, son of a bitch. And I said, I think I'm going through something, but I cannot fucking wait for that movie, dude. Cannot wait.
Like that
from
trailer.
Aviator to Killers of the Flower Moon. Like give me to Shutter Island, even Gangs of New York. Like Leo and Marty are perfect.
That trailer for Killers of the Flower Moon.
The Osage took their name from Missouri and Osage Rivers. Niukanska, children of the middle waters. Move, said the great white father. There are many, so many hungry wolves. Can you find the wolves in this picture? Find the wolves in this picture.
I'm just like, I just got chills thinking about it. I was like, this is the best trailer I've ever seen. It's absolutely unfathomably great. It has all my favorite things in it. It looks amazing. Like all the shots, the slow motion, the oil. I'm like, oh my God, it's like, this is like Marty's Chinatown. And I'm like freaking out. And I've watched it like 25 times. The lesson is if you want to have the best career, you know, you really have to pick your collaborators very carefully who know and you can trust and you enrich each other's work. And I'm just like, there's a reason why Leo does like a Tarantino movie and a Scorsese movie. And then some other movies he might give someone a chance who's emerging. And then he's like, nah, that didn't work. I'll go back to Marty.
Yeah.
I'm good. And
even like, look, a Scorsese movie that I love, but I think is, you know, hasn't aged as well. Leonardo DiCaprio is turned out to be the best part of The Departed.
Yeah.
You know, like, he is not having fun in that movie. And I think as time goes by.
But that's a fun. I fucking love that. That movie's so fun. That movie is really fun. But he is, in all the actors that got all the plaudits for that, he is on another level in The Departed.
Even Keel. Yeah. Yeah.
My heart rate is jacked. My hand
it's
steady.
Everything that is exterior in Wolf of Wall Street is interior in The Departed. I mean, you're right. I love
him. Yeah.
I just can't wait to watch him work every day. I just think he's phenomenal.
And this movie in particular is the other thing the one lesson we've learned is Martin Scorsese is probably now at this point, inarguably the greatest living American filmmaker. And the energy that this 80-year-old man can still elicit in a movie, in a trailer, it should be fucking enviable to emerging 20-year-olds who, like, you watch Shallow Grave when it came out, or you watch Blood Simple, and you're like,
yes.
Oh, where's the, oh, look at this fucking energy. My heart rate is going up. And it's like, it shouldn't happen with like a 70-something-year-old filmmaker making The Wolf of Wall Street. He shouldn't be able to make a movie that is this exciting, this bold, this crazy. But he is just playing a different game. We're all playing checkers. He's playing chess. He's just special. He's just unbelievable.
He's my favorite, hands down. And like, it's, I like him and Hitchcock, and those are my guys. And no matter where you go with Scorsese, no matter how fucked up or weird or normal or, you know, or not, it's recognizable humanity.
Yeah.
Shutter Island, you live through his fear.
Yeah.
You live through his trauma. You understand, like, he's always showing you a life on Earth, and the music, and how he uses Scorsese elements. I mean, look, Thelma Schoonmaker.
Yeah.
Secret
a fucking
Weapon.
Genius. Yeah. Genius.
Fuck. Without her, I don't know that we have the level. But he's a monster assembling his ensemble, his crew, his community, and the product he gives out is entirely, I believe, life affirming. Even in its most violent, most depraved, most ridiculous, and drug addicted, and horrifying, ultimately, what you're saying, Blake, I agree with 100%. Which is, like, whenever I'm watching a Scorsese movie, I feel more alive, and I want to live more. And I think that's a fucking gift, you know.
Well, I can't top that. That's so beautiful, and it's a beautiful sentiment. And let me tell you right now, when fucking Killers of the Flower Moon comes out, we're just going to have to do a special episode where we just talk about it, because my friend Maria, our mutual friend Maria Lewis, has fucking read the book. She's telling me you got to read the book before you go see the movie. I'm so excited for it. And we might just even play. You guys are just going to listen now. I'm going to play us out in this great episode of The Decade Project. After you've heard lots of Wolf of Wall Street drops and quotes and silliness, just going to play you out. You can just listen to the audio experience of the Killers of the Flower Moon trailer, because this is the gift of Martin Scorsese. 10 years later, he's still the best. He's still the king.
Yeah, period. He is the fucking king. And the thing that made me the most sad was when I saw the thing that he said about, I'm 80 years old and I'm running out of time to tell the stories I want to tell. Just like, gobble it up, Marty. Show us your opus.
Get some
that music.
Get some fucking billionaires to give him some stem cells or something. Make this guy live into his 90s, for God's sake, making movies.
That's, and if Wolf of Wall Street is about anything else, it's about the fact that they will not fucking do that. They would never invest in art. All they would do is build up more bullshit boats. You know what I mean?
All right. Well, I'm going to batten down the hatches with Shea Whigham. I'm going to say thank you to Rob Belushi. You're the best. This has been so fun. And people are going to catch us talking more on too much movies and all that sort of stuff. But you're the best. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
You are, man. You're beautiful. Thank you for having me.
And it feels like such a 20th century movie. It feels like something David Lean would have done or tried to do when he still had that kind of currency. And even then, he might not have succeeded.
It's incredible, because like, if you don't have time to watch all 5 seasons of Lost, you can just watch Fearless.
Not a week goes by that I don't think of the ending of Gallipoli. It's left a mark. A year of living dangerously. You know, and then something like Last Wave, even, that's so deeply embedded with the land and the story of the land, the story of place. You know, I don't know that I'd seen very many movies at that point in my life that had such a down ending, and they had such a, you know, sort of strong sense of folklore attached to it as that. And something always so poetic and lyrical about Peter Weir's work.
Gallipoli was the first movie that ever traumatized me, and I don't think I ever really recovered from it. And I'm still upset that they played it in school. Like, I don't think it's actually possible to make an, they say it's not possible to make an anti-war movie, but I think Peter Weir pulled it off.
Yes.
Because no one watches that movie then thinks, I want to go to war.
Peter Weir is the greatest director that Australia has ever produced. Like, bar none, hands down. Like, no one else is even in the room.
I think you have covered some really titanic filmmakers and some really titanic films so far, but I truly think what makes Peter Weir special and what makes you doing this one special is we don't talk about Peter Weir that way, and we should. Peter Weir is one of those guys who I don't get why he isn't a bigger name, why he isn't more in that rarefied air, because I think film for film, he's one of our very best filmmakers. He has brought his A game repeatedly to many properties. There are films of his that I hold very dear. Fearless, The Mosquito Coast. I will fight somebody if they talk bad about The Mosquito Coast. It's, man, I love that movie. But in general, I just think he is a special filmmaker, a smart, lyrical, hallucinatory filmmaker. He's a very dreamy filmmaker, and I don't think he gets his due.
You know, Master and Commander is one of my all-time favorite movies. Easily one of the best movies of the last 20 years. It's, it's a grand scale. There's a historical backdrop to it, but at the same time, there's such an intimacy in the relationships.
Which I think is not just a great film and one of the last great epics in the truest sense. I think is actually kind of a sliding doors change point moment in cinema history. I think 2003, when that comes along, and it is an old-fashioned, you know, we don't make them like that anymore type film. I think if Master and Commander spawns a franchise at that point, the entire cinema landscape globally is completely different.
That's the movie that I wanted to see 10 of those, you know. And yeah, I know they're big fans of Fast and Furious and everything, and God bless you, but Master and Commander should have been.
It's one of those things. Again, I am not I'm not a seafaring man, sir. But there is a sense of authenticity. There's a sense of really watching a genuine dedication to recreating history unfold on a big screen in front of you that can't help but inspire just genuine admiration and awe.
If you're gonna pick a film where he really brings every one of his skills to the table, it's Master and Commander. I think you picked the right one, man.
Yeah, very excited to see what you pull out of this, Blake.
That's right. Our next series is Peter Weir and Russell Crowe's Master and Commander. The series is called Podcaster and Commander.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.